The misery of all that first year in prison was intolerable, and it had an irritating, bitter effect on me. During that first year, I failed to notice many things in my misery. I shut my eyes and did not want to look. Among my spiteful and hostile companions in prison, I did not observe the good ones, the men who were capable of thought and feeling in spite of their repellent outer husk. In the midst of ill-natured sayings, I sometimes failed to notice kind and friendly words, which were the more precious because they were uttered with no interested motives, and often came straight from a heart which had suffered and endured more than mine. But why enlarge on this? I was very glad to get thoroughly tired. I might go to sleep when I got home. For the nights were an agony in the summer, almost worse than in the winter. The evenings, it is true, were sometimes very nice. The sun, which had been on the prison yard all day, set at last. Then followed the cool freshness of evening, and then the comparatively cold night of the steps. The convicts wandered in groups about the yard, waiting to be locked in. The chief mass, it is true, were crowding into the kitchen. There some burning question of the hour was always being debated. They argued about this and that, sometimes discussed some rumour, often absurd, though it aroused extraordinary interest in these men cut off from the outer world. A report came, for instance, that our major was being turned out. Convicts are as credulous as children. They know themselves that the story is ridiculous, that it has been brought by a notorious gossip, an absurd person. The convict Kvasov, whom it had long been an accepted rule not to believe, and who could never open his mouth without telling a lie, yet everyone pounced on his story, talked it over and discussed it, amusing themselves, and ending by being angry with themselves and ashamed of themselves for having believed Kvasov.
"Why, who's going to send him away?" shouted one. "No fear, his neck is thick, he can hold his own."
"But there are others over him, surely," protested another, an eager and intelligent fellow who had seen something of life, but was the most argumentative man in the world.
"One raven won't pick out another's eyes," a third, a grey-headed old man who was finishing his soup in the corner in solitude, muttered sullenly as though to himself.
"I suppose his superior officers will come to ask you whether they're to sack him,"
a fourth added casually, strumming lightly on the balalaika.
"And why not?" answered the second, furiously. "All the poor people could petition for it. You must all come forward if they begin questioning. To be sure, with us it's all shouting, but when it comes to deeds, we back out."
"What do you expect?" said the balalaika player. "That's what prison's for."
"The other day," the excited speaker went on, not taking any notice of him, "there was some flour left. We scraped together what little there was and were sending it to be sold. But no, he heard about it. Our foreman let him know. It was taken away. He wanted to make something out of it, to be sure. Was that fair now?"
"But who is it you want to complain to?"
"Who? Why, the inspector that's coming."
"What inspector?"
"It's true, lads, that an inspector's coming,"
said a lively young fellow of some education, who had been a clerk and was reading the Duchesse de la Vallière or something of the kind. He was always merry and amusing, but he was respected for having a certain knowledge of life and of the world. Taking no notice of the general interest aroused by the news that an inspector was coming, he went straight up to one of the cooks and asked for some liver. Our cooks often used to sell such things. They would, for instance, buy a large piece of liver at their own expense, cook it and sell it in small pieces to the convicts.
"One ha'porth or two ha'porths?" asked the cook.
"Cut me two ha'porths. Let folks envy me," answered the convict.
"There's a general, lads, a general coming from Petersburg. He'll inspect all Siberia. It's true, they said so at the commander's."
This news produced an extraordinary sensation. For a quarter of an hour there was a stream of questions. Who was it? What general? What was his rank? Was he superior to the general here? Convicts are awfully fond of discussing rank, officials, which of them takes precedence, which can lord it over the other, and which has to give way. They even quarrel and dispute and almost fight over the generals. One wonders what difference it can make to them. But a minute knowledge of generals and the authorities altogether is the criterion of a man's knowledge, discrimination, and previous importance in the world. Discussion about the higher authorities is generally considered the most refined and important conversation in prison.
"Then it turns out to be true, lads. They are coming to sack the major,"
observes Kvasov, a little red-faced man, excitable and remarkably muddle-headed. He had been the first to bring the news about the major.
"He'll bribe them,"
the grim, grey-headed convict, who had by now finished his soup, brought out jerkily.
"To be sure he will," said another. "He's grabbed enough money. He had a battalion before he came to us. The other day he was wanting to marry the head priest's daughter."
"But he didn't. They showed him the door. He was too poor. He's not much of a match. When he gets up from a chair, he takes all he's got with him. He lost all his money gambling at Easter. Fedka said so."
"Yes, the lad's not one to spend, but he gets through cash no end."
"Oh, brother, I was married too. It's no use for a man to be married. When you're married, the night's too short," remarked Skuratov, putting his word in.
"Oh, indeed, it was you we were talking about, of course,"
observed the free-and-easy youth who had been a clerk.
"But you were a silly fool, Kvasov, let me tell you. Do you suppose the major could bribe a general like that, and that such a general would come all the way from Petersburg to inspect the major? You are a fool, my lad, let me tell you."
"Why, because he's a general, won't he take a bribe?"
someone in the crowd observed sceptically.
"Of course he won't. If he does, he'll take a jolly big one."
"To be sure he will, to match his rank."
"A general will always take bribes," Kvasov observed with decision.
"You've tried it on, I suppose,"
said Baklushin, suddenly coming in and speaking contemptuously.
"I don't believe you've ever seen a general."
"I have, though."
"You're lying. Liar yourself."
"Lads, if he has seen one, let him tell us all straight away which general he knows. Come, speak up, for I know all the generals."
"I've seen General Tzibert,"
Kvasov answered with strange hesitation.
"Tzibert? There isn't such a general.
He looked at your back, I suppose, your Tzibert, when he was a lieutenant colonel, maybe, and you fancied in your fright he was a general."
"No, listen to me," cried Skuratov, "for I am a married man. There really was such a general in Moscow, Tzibert, from a German family, though he was a Russian. He used to confess to a Russian priest every year at the Fast of the Assumption, and he was always drinking water, lads, like a duck. Every day he'd drink 40 glasses of Moscow river water. They said that he took it for some disease. His valet told me so himself."
"He bred carp in his belly, I bet, with all that water,"
observed the convict with the balalaika.
"Come, do shut up. We are talking business, and they...
What is this, Inspector Brothers?" a fussy old convict called Martinov, who had been a hussar, anxiously inquired.
"What nonsense people talk,"
observed a sceptic.
"Where do they get it from, and how do they fit it in? And it's all nonsense."
"No, it's not nonsense,"
Kulikov, who up to now had been majestically silent, observed dogmatically. He was a man of some consequence, about 50, with an exceptionally prepossessing countenance and disdainfully dignified manners. He was aware of the fact and was proud of it. He was a veterinary surgeon, partly of gypsy descent, who used to earn money by doctoring horses in the town and sold vodka in prison. He was a clever fellow and had seen a good deal. He dropped his words as though he were giving out rubles.
"That's the truth, lads," he went on calmly. "I heard it last week. There's a general coming, a very important one. He'll inspect the whole of Siberia. We all know he will be bribed, too, but not by our old eight eyes. He wouldn't dare to come near him. There are generals and generals, brothers. There are some of all sorts, only I tell you, our major will stay where he is, anyway. That's a sure thing. We can't speak, and none of the officers will speak against one of their own. The inspector will look into the prison, and then he'll go away and report that he found everything in order."
"That's right, lads, but the Major's in a funk. He's drunk from morning till night."
"But in the evening he drives a different sort of cart. Fedka was saying so."
"You'll never wash a black dog white. It's not the first time he's been drunk, is it?"
"I say, what if the General really does nothing? It is high time they took notice of their goings-on,"
the convicts said to each other in excitement. The news about the inspector was all over the prison in a moment. Men wandered about the yard impatiently, repeating the news to one another, though some were purposely silent and maintained an indifferent air, evidently trying to increase their importance by so doing. Others remained genuinely unconcerned. Convicts with balalaikas were sitting on the barrack steps. Some went on gossiping, others struck up songs, but everyone was in a state of great excitement that evening. Between 9 and 10 we were all counted, driven into the barracks and locked up for the night. The nights were short. We were woken between 4 and 5, and we were never all asleep before 11. There was always noise and talking till that hour, and sometimes, as in winter, there were card parties. It became insufferably hot and stifling in the night. Though there were wafts of cool night air from the open window, the convicts tossed about on their beds all night, as though in delirium. The fleas swarmed in myriads. There were fleas in the winter, too, and in considerable numbers, but from the beginning of spring they swarmed in multitudes. Though I had been told about it before, I could not believe the reality till I experienced it. And as the summer advanced, they grew more and more ferocious. It is true that one can get used to fleas. I have learnt this by experience. But one still has a bad time of it. They torment one so much that one lies at last as though in a fever, feeling that one is not asleep, but in delirium. When at last, towards morning, the fleas desist, and as it were subside, and when one really drops into a sweet sleep in the cool of dawn, the pitiless tattoo of the drum booms out at the prison gate, and the morning watch begins. Rolled up in your sheepskin, you hear with a curse the loud, distinct sounds, as though you were counting them. While through your sleep, there creeps into your mind the insufferable thought that it will all be the same tomorrow, and the day after tomorrow, and for years to come, right up to the day of freedom. But when, one wonders, will that freedom be, and where is it? Meanwhile, one must wake up. The daily movement and bustle begins. Men dress and hurry out to work. It is true one can sleep for an hour at midday.